Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, also author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy news for conservatives, as usual. And, Jim, it's hard to know whether the selection of a city for the 2016 convention is good news or bad news. We'll probably have a better idea once it's actually been experienced. But on Tuesday, the committee that is in charge of deciding these things for the Republican National Committee had to choose between Cleveland and Dallas. And by unanimous 8-0 vote, they picked Cleveland. And so everyone, of course, is now trying to decide if this means LeBron James is coming back to Cleveland as well, because they're, of course, intertwined with one another. But ultimately, John Kasich's happy. Democrats in Ohio are happy because it helps bring business to Cleveland and all sorts of other things. Ultimately, how big of a difference does this make?
Not a terribly big difference, but it's a good martini if you own a hotel in Cleveland or if you're looking to rent out your place on Craigslist or something like that. It's a bad martini for Dallas. I don't think it's a particularly bad choice. Although, as I said on Campaign Spot yesterday, the funny thing about it is if you're average convention goer, and I say this as somebody who's covered them going back to 2000 Philadelphia, for those involved in the process, they're all kind of seeing the same. You're in a hotel, you go to the middle of the city, it's tough, the security is ridiculous, there are protesters, you're in an arena most of the time, you just want to avoid a disaster. And while I don't think Tampa necessarily was a disaster for Republicans, having a hurricane bear down on the city right as it was getting started is a bit of a complication there. So there aren't really hurricanes in Cleveland in summer, so that's a good start there. I also think, look, obviously messaging is a small factor in it. Having the convention in the state does not help you win the state, so that really shouldn't be much of a factor in this. But, you know, if Republicans had held it in Dallas, you'd heard this, the usual arguments of, oh, they're a southern party, they're a regional party, they're guns and cowboys and you know, deep red state, you know, redneck, yada, yada, yada. I think making it in Cleveland and making the pitch for Ohio, obviously a central state to winning the presidency, is pretty important. I think, obviously, look, we believe that conservative policies can help cities like Cleveland that are kind of hollowed out by the Rust Belt and economic depression and the loss of manufacturing. So there's potential useful messaging there. I know Hugh Hewitt is doing cartwheels, and I very much look forward to him reenacting the opening credits of the Drew Carey Show.
Yeah, Cleveland doesn't have the greatest reputation, although many people pointed out yesterday that it is doing much better in recent years than it had been before. And I guess if history is any guide, the last time the Republicans held their convention in a Rust Belt city that had seen much better days, it was Detroit in 1980. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, some precedent for something that's turning out pretty well.
Exactly. Let's see if we can get a nominee close to that caliber. That'll be the next challenge. All right, on to the bad martini now. And we've talked a couple different times about the latest breakout of violence between the Israelis and the Palestinians, specifically Hamas, the latest trigger, of course, being the murder of the three teenagers, one of which held dual citizenship in the United States and Israel. Israel is responding not only to that, but also to the never-ending flow of rockets from Gaza into Israel. It's usually just the southern part of Israel, but there have been rockets over Jerusalem, a bunch knocked down over Tel Aviv. So many different targets now, and Israel has promised that either they will get Hamas to stop or they will stop Hamas for Hamas. But the reaction from the Obama administration here is kind of curious in a couple different ways. In Israel, the special assistant to Barack Obama and the White House coordinator for the Middle East, Philip Gordon, basically ripping Israel right to their face, saying, quote, "Israel confronts an undeniable reality. It cannot maintain military control of another people indefinitely. Doing so is not only wrong, but a recipe for resentment and recurring instability." He went on to say, "How will Israel remain democratic and Jewish if it attempts to govern the millions of Palestinian Arabs who live in the West Bank? How will it have peace if it's unwilling to delineate a border and the occupation and allow for Palestinian sovereignty?" And on and on and on. First of all, calling it occupation, that's a buzzword. The Israelis would use the word disputed territories. But nonetheless, Jim, when you look at the response, it's usually the United States that has a much different response than the rest of the world when Israel responds to acts of terrorism. Right now, it looks like this administration is pretty much echoing the way the world generally reacts to these things.
The administration has been accused of being anti-Israel from day one. And their defense and the defense of a lot of Democrats is, no, no, no. we're just committed to the peace process, and you guys are you know, always unfair in your assessment, and we just want to see peace. We're just willing to you know, speak honestly with our friends, and we know Israel's interests better than they do, which I'm sure many Israelis kind of aren't so persuaded of. If you're going to criticize Israel, could you not do it when the bombs are falling? I mean, this kind of seems kind of ridiculous to be saying, oh, Israel's a problem here. And all of this is triggered by Palestinians. We don't quite know who. We're pretty darn sure it's Hamas. According to at least one report, executing the three kids deliberately. There are a lot of people who interpreted this as some sort of effort to kidnap these teenagers that went wrong. No, actually, it's now looking like there was an execution, 10 shots from a silencer, at least according to one report from Reuters, citing a U.S. source believed to be the FBI investigating the killing. You know, in a circumstance like this, if you're mad at Israel, then you've clearly got Israel on the brain, and you're just decided, well, they're the problem, they're the scapegoat, they're the villain in all this. And, you know, could you spare some outrage for Hamas? Could we not give the Palestinians any more money because they're already too tied to Hamas? This is our bad martini, but maybe it's also like a clarifying martini. Point out, like, if the administration is angry at Israel under these circumstances, then it's clear they're going to be the one, they're going to blame Israel for everything that happens from here on out. And I'd like to think that pro-Israel voters would think and vote accordingly.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And our good old friend Harry Reid is back here. The Senate Democrats are a little confused, it appears, Jim, on how exactly the government functions. A law was passed, that being the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. Had a lot of provisions in there that said, hey, this will be left up to the discretion of the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which is a whole constitutional question in and of itself. But one of the things that Kathleen Sebelius, the then secretary, implemented at the blessing of the president, of course, was the birth control mandate, forcing employers to pay all the costs of contraception, regardless of how that contraception was defined. Christians at Hobby Lobby, Mennonites at Conestoga Wood Products took that to the Supreme Court. They won 5-4 on a religious freedom victory. Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats not taking that line down. They've decided to pass legislation that would overrule the Hobby Lobby decision. And here's Harry Reid's explanation as to why they're coming at this the way they are.
But the one thing we're going to do during this work period, sooner rather than later, is to ensure that women's lives are not determined by virtue of five white men. This Hobby Lobby decision is outrageous, and we're going to do something about it.
Double crazy here, Jim. First of all, I'm pretty sure the court's already ruled on this, and secondly, apparently Clarence Thomas is now white.
Yeah, and you know, look, we've you know, picked on Harry Reid quite a bit in this final martini, but I don't know if, you know, it's kind of he and Pelosi are in a race to be which political figure pays less attention to what actually comes out of their mouth, because I seem to remember at one point he had said, made some decision that, you know, Clarence, he thought Clarence Thomas was a joke, or he was some sort of, you know, wasn't a serious thinker or something like that. I guess he's not authentically black enough for Harry Reid, the expert on all things that are black and things like that. This kind of, you know, just very basically, you can just tell he's so locked in on his typical mean, cruel white men demonization campaign that he doesn't even bother to think about who he's talking about. I suppose we shouldn't be surprised by this. It does give us one more opportunity to say, way to go, Nevada, way to go. Would Sharon Angle really have been that bad?
Yes, and he's not up again until 2016. So the best thing that Republican voters can do is demote him in a few months. That's about all they can do at this point because the people of Nevada failed to fire him. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.